Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Tuesday, the 15th of February, recording at 9:10 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights here today. The Asian stock markets, mostly steady. Japan doing quite well overall. And European stock markets, again, mostly steady, although the UK was down slightly, as was Sweden. Best gain on my screen appears to be the Italian MIB, so that's good, showing that the southern European markets are not being savaged, as had been the case for a while last year. And in the Americas, so Wall Street closing with modest declines, just over a third of 1% for the three major indices, and that was pretty much the case for the whole Americas region. Small losses. An exception was Canada, which has a very small gain. So not a whole lot going on there. Government bond markets. The U.S. long dated, eking out a little bit further rally here today, up by the U.S. 30-year spot bond is at 119.04. That's up 6/32. The dollar is quiet here today. Sterling is firmish, 161.25. And the Australian dollar has eased back beneath the parity, currently 0.9959. The most interesting thing that's occurred, I think, during the day is that those high-flying grain and bean prices ran into some profit-taking here today. Rough rice was down the limit, and wheat had a big pullback here of nearly 32 cents. And soybeans had a big correction as well. Corn down a little bit, 5.5 cents to 7.01. Against that background, the precious metals were all stronger. And gold has had a good day. It's currently at 13.73 and 70 cents. Platinum, well off its highs, but at 18.32. And palladium must be right on its highs, 8.39.50. Silver at 30.72. So that's steady, good solid action there. The industrial metals, which have been on a bit of a tear recently, they're a little bit easier in here today. We had a turnaround in copper, which reached a new high at 456.75, but it's lost traded after hours at 453.80. That's down almost 10 cents. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, in terms of stock markets, we've seen an improvement in the tone as far as Asia is concerned. I think a number of people must be thinking that just looking at the charts, that we've seen all these mean reversion corrections towards the rising 200-day moving averages among leaders, such as the ASEAN sector, which has pulled back very close in most instances, not all, but in most instances quite close to the rising 200-day moving average. I think the main exception to that is Malaysia, which had been a bit of an outperformer in the latter part of last year. But I think investors are realizing that the overvaluation, the overextension on the trends has been largely largely corrected, and that this might be a better buying than selling opportunity. And that would be my view overall. And simultaneously, we've seen the rise and rise of Wall Street, which has become more overextended relative to its 200-day moving average averages, and is therefore becoming increasingly susceptible to some mean reversion. It's not as overextended as many of the Asian markets, high-flying Asian markets, were back in November, but it is overextended. So I would be careful about the fashion play to Wall Street in this environment. That may be we may well be near the end of that divergence. We may well see the pendulum swing back the other way. A lot depends on perceptions regarding inflation, which has been a big concern. But the sharp sell-off in grains and beans that we saw here today is one step in the right direction here, in the sense that markets, I think there was a little bit of news about rain in the Beijing area, where there's been this big long drought. But certainly, if we were to, again, one day does not change the trend, but if these grain markets were to enter a corrective phase for any length of time, that would be good news, I think, for the Asian and developing markets generally. And yeah, it would cause those food price inflation concerns to ebb somewhat. But right now, in the short term, there is scope for some short covering and bargain hunting in last year's high flyers that have been getting these mean reversion corrections over the last few months. Okay, what else to mention here? Japan. Now, Owen and I have said for months that one of the keys that we felt, or one of the keys to a decent stock market recovery by Japan, would be a weaker Japanese yen. And while the yen is weakened against some currencies, I think what we specifically had in mind was against the U.S. dollar. And as I speak, the dollar's rallied back up to 83.77 yen. That's getting up near the higher side of its range. So, although it's still range bound, the upward dynamics have been, or the dynamics rather, have been mostly upwards in the last couple of months, and that's a positive sign overall that we may well see a weaker yen. It's been a theory of mine that the Bank of Japan was going to weaken the yen, and never let it be said that central banks cannot weaken their currency. They may find it difficult to strengthen the currency without punishing interest rates, but they can certainly weaken it. You just print more of it. And I suspect that's exactly what's been happening behind the scenes. And that would be very good in terms of the export earnings for Japanese companies. And the chart action does look, I mentioned that it looks like the second section, which is often a leader, that's a small cap index, is breaking up out of a base formation. It's had to run a fair way from the lower side of a trading range to the upper side to hit that new recovery high, but that could be important, and Japan has been looking steady for a while now. And in terms of currencies, the dollar's firmer tone hasn't lasted long, but basically we have mostly range-bound currencies, and that's not a bad thing either. So that's a calm, quiet environment. In terms of long-dated government bonds, we've seen a reasonable little rally here by the U.S. long-dated contracts. They broke down sharply at the beginning of the month and have subsequently had a gradual move back towards the underside of the previous trading range. Now, that ought to be a sell opportunity for those who wish to short the bonds. If it isn't, I think really it's probably only Ben Bernanke standing between the long-dated government bond market and a further rise in yields. It's really just a question of, is he prepared to stuff enough paper dollars into the dike to prevent these yields from rushing higher. We'll see, but this is not a trend that's going to play itself out in the very short term. I think my view is that while we will be watching it, monitoring it on a day-by-day basis, and I'll be trading it accordingly from the short side, the bigger story is that that 28 to 30 year, depending on where you start measuring it, a bull market in long-dated government bonds that ended in 2008 and 2009. So yields hit their lows and are starting a long-term secular upward trend. Now that will be punctuated by lots and lots of ranging activity, sometimes for more than a year or so. But the big long-term secular trend for yields is now upwards, and it's not hard to understand that when you consider how much money printing has actually occurred, and when you consider how much debt issuance has actually taken place. The money printing is inflationary. It's just a matter of where does that inflation mostly show up. Fuller money has maintained all along that it would be first and foremost in the commodity markets, and we do see that, and it'll be in other assets, and it's helped stock markets, and it's obviously a much better development for stock markets than it is for long-dated government bonds. So again, I maintain that long-dated rather U.S. Treasury bond futures are near a shorting level. If I were to play that with those pro shares funds, I'd be buying in here right now. Those those reverse what do they call them? Those ultra short funds. Okay. Anything else that is worthy of mention here? Yeah, but I probably should talk about oil. This NYMEX crude. Now we're looking at the spot March contract. I'm looking at the spot March contract, which is way down at 84.36. Now there's just a glut of nearby supply in the USA, and that's good for the U.S. economy. Crude prices on that Brent contract are much higher. Exactly how much higher, I'll tell you in just a second. I'll bring up that, so remember I mentioned that about 84.5 on the NYMEX, and the Brent crude spot month is at $101.65. So you can see we've got this $16 spread here between the Brent and the NYMEX. And there are lots of theories and suggestions as to why that's the case. I think part of it's due to storage capacity, but why in the U.S. Being full? But why is storage capacity full? And that's because the U.S. is awash in natural gas, particularly unconventional natural gas from the shale gas. And that remains a game changer overall. And that is good for the global economy, and particularly good for the US economy, because it's only the US and to a lesser extent Canada that have developed and utilized the techniques for extracting shale gas. But last but not least here in this broadcast, you might have seen the announcement, and Owen commented on this the other day as well, about, I think he commented on it yesterday, that PetroChina had bought a 50-50, sorry, had entered a 50-50 partnership with Encana, the Canadian gas company. And this was mostly written up on the basis that clearly China was interested in importing some gas from Canada. Well, yes, but it's especially interested in Encana's shale gas technology. And China has a great deal of shale gas. It hasn't been able to tap any of it yet, but over the next decade, you can bet that it'll produce plenty of it. And my long-term feeling is that this plays in nicely with the view of a sustained period, which is going to be really quite favorable for the global economy. The big fear was always that we were going to see some energy crunch. Now, there's no room for complacency on this, but again, we have right from the beginning described the shale gas as a game changer, because it provides a very significant, tappable, comparatively clean fossil fuel source, which the world didn't have in earlier decades, and or it couldn't tap in earlier decades. And this has bought time, and time was desperately needed, given the dependence on crude oil. So again, lots of gas over the next 20 years, while all the nuclear power is being developed, and while additional advances will be made, certainly in solar and perhaps wind and some of the biofuels as well. So, the world doesn't look as bad as so many people have painted it over the last 2 or 3 years. And on that note, all the best to all of you.